Well, many of you who know me know that I am a dog lover. After my husband and I got married, when we first moved to an apartment where I could have a dog, I went out and bought a dog the next day, and I have had a dog of some kind ever since that day came. In fact, if it were up to me, we would have several dogs, but Gary thinks that one is enough. Now, just a word to the wise, to you single women, check these things out before you get married. Because that is definitely a drawback to marriage. You don't always get to choose what you do in every area of your life. I would have more dogs if I could. But just this last year, my daughter bought a dog, and so I have a new dog in my life. I get to keep her some when my daughter travels. We have a picture of Lindsay and her dog, Chloe. Chloe is a Whippet. She's 9 months old now, and she's a very sweet dog. But sometime after Lindsay got her, she began limping. And the limp did not go away. And so eventually Lindsay took her to the vet, who x-rayed her leg. And he discovered that it had not developed normally. And the bone that was supposed to go into the knee socket had not completed growing. And there was a gap between the bone and the knee. And so it was painful for Chloe to walk and to run. And she began limping to compensate so that it wouldn't hurt. The only remedy was surgery. And so the vet went in and he took this bone and he cut it. And then he inserted this metal apparatus that went all around the bone. And twice a day for 10 days, Lindsay had to go in and turn something in that metal apparatus to separate that bone little by little so that new bone could grow in there and eventually the bone would be where it needed to be, and the bone would be long enough. This is a picture of Chloe with her little leg. Lindsay has to put a bandage around this metal apparatus, but you can kind of see how it's designed on her leg. But I just took that Friday. She was at my house, and I wanted you to have a good picture. But the hope is that after all this is over, that she will be able to run and play with no pain. Now, I want you to think about this situation from little Chloe's perspective. She was a very happy little dog. One day, her owner took her away to a strange place where strange people were there. The next thing she knew, she got a shot and was asleep. But when she woke up, she was in far worse pain than she had ever been with the little leg before. And this metal cage was around her leg. And then, after a couple of days, her owner took her back home. So things were better. She still had no clue why this was on her leg. But she went back home. But then this girl who had her, who had been very kind to her all this time, suddenly began turning this thing twice a day, which did not feel good. And then she would clean around all the little insertions of the bone. Now, from Chloe's perspective, there was no way she could understand this. A dog cannot understand the purpose of medical treatment. She had no clue that she was going to be stronger, healthier, that she would be able to run and play more normally without it hurting. She cannot grasp that. She is a dog. She cannot understand it. If I could try to explain it to her all day, and she would never understand what was happening to her. All she can see is she wants to run and play at hearts. Now she has this big thing on her leg and she can't even lick it. And that's what she wants to do. Well, you know, that's very similar to our situation when we face trials. All we can see is what's right in front of us and what we're going through. We don't understand what God is doing behind the scenes. But God is at work and he has a purpose and he is doing something. We just can't see it. And God is so big that even if he tried to explain it to us, we might not quite grasp the whole thing. The gap between us and God is greater than the gap between Lindsay and her dog. But James helps us because he helps us see how to deal with these trials. Even though we may not ever know the specific things that God is doing and what he's doing, James has given us a glimpse into how to handle those. If you turn in your Bible to the beginning of James, we're just going to look at a few verses tonight. And you've already looked at them this week. In James 1, verse 2, he says, "My brothers and sisters, consider it nothing but joy when you fall into all sorts of trials." So James' prescription for trials is to consider them or view them as joy. The word for consider means look at. It means to deem it as joy, to account it as joy. We are to deliberately adopt an attitude of joy as we face trials. Consider is a thinking term. We're to think of it this way. It's not a feeling term. I'm to see it from God's perspective, which means I can see it with joy. And then James goes on to say, how do we do this? How do we incorporate joy into our lives? He gives us some specific ways. First, I want you to notice that he calls them trials of all sorts. And that means we can apply these verses to any kinds of trials that we go through, that we fall into. He says they're the trials that we fall into. The word in the Greek is parapipto for fall into, and it means to fall into so as to be encompassed. So this is the picture I get. I'm just kind of walking through life. You know, everything seems to be going fine. And suddenly, I wish I could do this without hurting myself, just fall off the stage here. You just fall into it. It just suddenly, this thing happens and you are suddenly down in this hole and you're just covered with it and there's no way out. You can hardly move. You can hardly breathe there. And you know, I'm a little bit claustrophobic, so this is a great picture for me to think of how it feels to be in a trial. You're surrounded by it. You're overcome by it. It's just suddenly hit you. You weren't expecting it and you didn't know it was going to happen. Now, these are not situations of hardship that we bring on by our own sin, by our own foolishness, by our own mistakes. That's not what this is talking about. This is talking about things that come from the outside that we aren't expecting. We did not cause ourselves. That's the kind of thing that James is talking about. These are just the kind of trials that a Christian suddenly encounters just walking through life. And I'm sure all of you are familiar with the storm that hit Florida last Friday morning in the wee hours, where many, many homes, churches, buildings were totally destroyed, and at least 20 people were killed, and it just left a whole wake of devastation behind it. And the aftermath of such a disaster is grief, it's difficulty, it's loss. You know, many people lost their homes, and it probably isn't even the monetary value of the homes that hurt so badly. It's a lot of the keepsakes and the memories that they have to go along with that, that they can never really recover. And everyone who died left behind friends and family who now have to grieve those losses. But the thing is about Florida, it has very few tornadoes. This was totally unexpected. It suddenly came, and it came during the middle of the night when most people had absolutely no warning. And I think that pictures the way we fall into these trials. It just suddenly comes upon us. We don't realize it's coming. And devastation comes into our lives of some kind. What kinds of trials might these be? I just wrote down a few thoughts, and it could be way beyond these. It could be illness. It could be death of a family member or a close friend. It could be a financial hardship that you face, a job loss. It could be difficult people in your life. It could be some conflict that you have to go through. It could be loss of a friend, not through death, but for some other reason. It could be a prodigal child. It could be loneliness. It could be infertility. It could be a family member with an addiction, an unfaithful spouse, a child with a disability. It could be injustice at work or in the larger world. It could be divorce. Or you could be a victim of crime, slander, or abuse, or any number of other things. These things come into our lives unexpectedly and hit us very hard. When that happens, James tells us to see the trial as joyful, but he gives us some specific ways to do that. This is his prescription for times of trial, and you are to use it as needed when these trials hit you from the outside. I think you've already seen the slide on that. Let's go on and read in James. Let's reread verse 2 and go on into verse 3. My brothers and sisters, consider it nothing but joy when you fall into all sorts of trials, because you know that the testing of your faith produces endurance. If you are to see your trials as joyful, as it says up here, you must realize that that trial is testing and proving your faith. And that means you have an opportunity to let your light shine more brightly to the world around you. The word for trials here means an attempt to learn the nature or character of something, as a scientist tests a substance. I don't know if any of you watch any of those crime scene shows, but they're always testing everything at the crime scene to see what it is. Well, that's what God is doing in a trial. He's testing your character to see what's really inside of you, because the trial will bring forth what is really there. What is inside comes out when things get hard. And in a sense, your life is squeezed, and what's inside comes out. The word for testing in verse 3, that's the first one was the word for trial in verse 2, but the word for testing in verse 3 is dokimion, which means a process to prove the genuineness of something. Is your faith real? The trial will show whether your faith is real. And you know, James has a lot to say about real, genuine faith. And he starts right here with trials. Trials prove the reality of what you believe. And in a trial, when you're facing those things, it gives that genuineness an opportunity to show to people that they may not have seen before. And Jesus said in Matthew 5:16, in the same way, let your light shine before people so that they can see your good deeds and give honor to your Father in heaven. This is one of those opportunities to do that. I won't read 1 Peter 2:9-12, but Peter says something very similar about us being called to proclaim his excellencies and that our good deeds bring God glory. We are called to be different kind of people. And when that trial comes, people can see the reality of that when we respond differently than the rest of the world. You know, the jeweler always showcases his wares on black cloth. You've probably noticed. It's because it's the darkness behind it that allows the glow of the metal and the diamond to show really better than it would show under any other circumstances. And the same is true of trials. When we are put in a dark situation, that light that God has put within us to show the reality of who he is shines brighter because everything's dark around us. It's that opportunity for us to show the world that faith is real and that it makes a difference. When we respond in grace and love to those who treat us unfairly or unkindly, we see that light. It's seen when our children go on drugs and we continue to have hope in God, believing that he holds their future in his hand. It's seen when we face death with the expectation of a wonderful future ahead of us. It's seen when we love the unlovely and forgive those who don't deserve it. It's seen in every trial there are situations to see the genuineness of your faith. And so that gives us the opportunity to show the world what God is like and what it's like to have a real faith that makes a difference in our everyday lives. I've told you before about the trial that my husband went through several years ago with his eye, so I won't go back into all the details, but it was a time of real darkness in his life. But I saw his faith brighter at that time than any other time in his life that I can think of, because he had to rely on God. And when faced with a hard situation, that's what came out of him, was his faith. I saw the reality of it more in that situation than in just everyday life, because he had to face a hard situation and he needed God to do it for him. James 1:3 says, the testing of your faith produces endurance. So that's the next thing we must realize, is that a trial produces the quality of endurance in us, which means that we keep on keeping on by faith, trusting that God will bring us through it. It produces the quality of endurance. We keep on keeping on by faith, trusting that God will bring us through it. In your lesson, I gave you a definition of the Greek word for endure. It literally means just to remain under something, to just stay and remain under that. Dr. Moose says it pictures a person successfully carrying a heavy load for a long time, and I think that's really a good picture to think of when you think of a trial. I think the phrase keep on keeping on is a good way to think of a trial, of endurance, that we remain under the trial, but we just keep on moving forward, trusting God. We don't let the trial bury us. We keep on moving forward in faith. We let the trial teach us what it means to endure. As I think about the word endure and how a trial teaches us endurance, I have to tell you that I hate to tell y'all this because now you're going to be asking me about it and I'm going to have to keep on keeping on, that God really has been convicting me for quite some time about not really being in shape. You know, he gave me this body. I'm supposed to take care of it. I haven't done it. So finally last month, I decided that out of obedience, I would go join a gym. So I did. But I also knew that I, you know, would likely fail, so I hired a trainer because I knew I couldn't do it. I mean, I needed somebody that was going to expect to see me and tell me what to do and all those kinds of things. Well, one of the things that this trainer has me doing is that she gives me weights and I just lift those weights and lift those weights up and down. And she has started me out on very light weights, but even so, the first time, you know, I was getting a little tired by the time this was over. But it is getting easier because in forcing myself to lift those weights, it is developing my muscles and they're getting stronger. And eventually she's going to give me weights that are a little heavier, but I should be able to do it because my muscles will then be stronger. Endurance is the same way. As you go through the trial, as you keep on keeping on, you're developing endurance. Your endurance is getting stronger and stronger and stronger so that you can handle the trial. And that's what God says the trials will do. It teaches us to keep on keeping on. It develops a character quality in us that cannot be developed any other way. So when we face these hard times, these trials, we have to realize these things. We have to realize that it is testing us. It's proving our faith, giving us an opportunity for others to see that it's real. But it also is producing that quality of endurance that we need as well. And we know that it's God that gives us the grace to endure. We're not doing it on our own. He is working in us to do this. We can make it through anything when God is there with us to do that. I want you to look at Hebrews 12 because I wanted you to see that Jesus also endured. Hebrews 12, 1-3 says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, we must get rid of every weight and the sin that clings so closely and run with endurance the race that is set before us, keeping our eyes fixed on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. For the joy set out for him, he endured the cross, disregarding the shame, and has taken his seat at the right hand of the throne of God. Think of him who endured such opposition against himself by sinners, so that you may not grow weary in your souls and give up. First, the author of Hebrews tells us to run our entire life, the race of life, with endurance. But he tells us to keep our eyes on Jesus. It's faith that will get us through the trial. It's keeping our eyes on Jesus. And we also see Jesus as a model of endurance. It said he endured the cross for the joy set before him. He was able to look at the long-term effect of what the trial was going to produce. That's what we have to do. We have to realize that it's proving our faith. It's testing our faith. It's giving us an opportunity to shine. But it's also producing that endurance in us that we need in life. We have to look at the long-term effect of it and not just focus on the hardship and the trial that we're living with now. And we need to model our endurance after Jesus's. And realize God has a greater purpose in all of it. And that God is working for our good. As James tells us, as Romans tells us, He is working for our good. And we have to believe that and trust Him in the middle of some very hard times. In what kinds of situations are we tempted to flee rather than endure, rather than stay under it? I asked myself that question and I thought, every situation we want to flee. I mean, we don't want to have to go through hard times and sorrows. That is not normal to us. We know it's like God has built us for heaven where we won't have to do that. We know that's the way it should be. But on this earth, we do have to go through these, but we just want to run. But I thought of a couple of examples. I think in marriage, there's a definite pull to just, every marriage has hard times and hardships and trials. You know, your husband can be a trial in your life. He can. And our tendency is to flee whatever the situation is. Maybe you're going through financial differences. Maybe you just want to escape the boredom. You're getting bored. You want to escape the boredom. Or maybe your husband just really isn't helping with the children or being the kind of husband and giving you the attention you think you should. It doesn't really matter what the situation is. That is not a situation to flee. That is a situation to remain in and to learn endurance and to trust in God. Or maybe it's a job situation. Maybe you want to flee a job situation because you've got people you work for that don't treat you fairly. Maybe you should have had a promotion. Maybe the situation is not good. Now, there are times I think that God says, okay, you can go. But there are times you need to stay because it's in that dark place that you are a light to other people. And I can't tell you when to stay and when to go. We'll get to that in a few minutes. But God says you ask Him for wisdom and He shows you when you stay and when you go. But those are our tendencies. Just remember, you're going to have to fight your tendency. Your tendency is going to be to flee. But James tells us that this is not even the end result of the trial. We've had that proof of our faith. We have developed endurance, but he says that endurance does even more than that. Go back to James 1, verse 4, and let endurance have its perfect effect, so that you will be perfect and complete, not deficient in anything. So endurance has another result. It produces maturity. Your faith is strengthened and completed. The idea is maturity, not perfection. The idea is we will become more like Jesus as we deal with trials. We'll become more whole and mature as people. Now, as we consider trials, I want to look at Hebrews 12 one more time, because right after those verses we read a few minutes ago is a section on discipline, the fact that God disciplines His children. But before we look at it, I want you to understand that the word discipline doesn't always mean correction. It doesn't always mean punishment to correct a child. It is a broader term than that. Think about a parent. A parent trains a child, and it's not always through discipline. Sometimes it is through modeling. Sometimes it is through teaching. There are many ways that you train a child. And the word here means child training in all of its aspects. In fact, I read this definition. The whole training and education of children, which relates to the cultivation of mind and morals, and employs for this purpose commands and admonitions, as well as reproof and punishment. So as we read this, realize it is about correction, but it's also about those other things that you do to train children. So I'm just going to read a few of these verses, Hebrews 12, 5 and 6, and then 11 through 13. And have you forgotten the exhortation addressed to you as sons? My son, do not scorn the Lord's discipline or give up when he corrects you. For the Lord disciplines the one he loves and chastens every son he accepts. And then down in verse 11, now all discipline seems painful at the time, not joyful. But later it produces the fruit of peace and righteousness for those trained by it. Therefore, strengthen your listless hands and your weak knees and make straight paths for your feet so that what is lame may not be put out of joint, but healed. The kind of faith that the author of Hebrews is talking about is a broad definition, but it includes the kind of trials. The kind of discipline that he talks about here includes the kind of trials that James talks about that come from no fault of our own. We're not being corrected for anything. It is just that we're being trained. Trained for righteousness, as this says. It produces peace. It produces righteousness if we are trained by it, is what Hebrews said. I think that's a key. We have to be allowing God to use this to teach us. If we're just constantly trying to escape the situation and we're only focused on getting out of it, we won't be learning the lessons that God has for us. It won't be producing endurance and it won't be producing maturity. We will have wasted that opportunity to learn what God wants to teach us. Let's read on in James. We're in verse 5 now. But if anyone is deficient in wisdom, he should ask God, who gives to all generously and without reprimand, and it will be given to him. But he must ask in faith without doubting. For the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea, blown and tossed around by the wind. For that person must not suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord, since he's a double-minded individual, unstable in all his ways. So as we face these trials, we realize that we ask God for wisdom to deal with it. That wisdom is not just knowledge, it's not simply knowledge, but it is an understanding of how to live out God's best in our lives. One scholar put it this way: wisdom is required because the faithful do not always know how to persevere, nor do they easily find the will to rejoice in future blessings while enduring present trials. A divine vision or perspective is needed in the present to aid the believer in the journey and to fortify the self against temptation. And James encourages us to be bold as we ask for wisdom, because he says God promises he'll give it to you. He says God delights to give these things to you. He is a good and gracious God. He wants to answer our prayers. And he doesn't reprove us for having to ask him for wisdom. He delights in it. And so James really encourages us. But he says if we doubt, God is not going to answer our prayers, that he answers the prayers of those who have faith in him. The word doubt means to be uncertain or to be at odds with oneself. In other words, you don't really know what to think. And the idea here is not that you doubt that there's a God. It's that you're not sure what he's like. And James says he's good. He answers prayer. He wants to help you. He promises to give you wisdom. This is the kind of God you can trust. This is the kind of God you don't have to doubt. You can know that is his character. He wants to answer your prayers for wisdom. He wants to be with you through the trials. And if we can't trust in that God, if we just don't know, then our faith is unstable as the waves in the ocean, is what James teaches us. But how encouraging to know that we're not alone as we go through this trial. It's not about me trying to figure out what to do here. It is about me going to God and depending on him for the answer as to what to do. Each of us searching for the answer ourselves as we ask God for his wisdom. And you know that he will guide. He uses his word to guide us. He uses other wise believers to help us know our path. And then he talks to us in our hearts as well. So ask God for the wisdom about your trial and he will give it to you. So if we will apply God's prescription for dealing at trials to see it as joyful, the way that we do that is we've got to realize that it is testing and proving the reality of our faith, which is going to give us opportunities to shine before others. We also have to realize that it is going to produce that endurance in us, and we're going to get stronger and stronger as we go through that trial. And that then will make us more mature people, more like Jesus. And so, with all that in mind, knowing that God can give us wisdom, we now can consider the trial to be joy without minimizing the difficulty and the sorrow in it. James is talking about how we view a trial, a way of looking at a trial. This isn't a feeling that I've just got to have this great feeling about the trial. It is about a way I choose to look at my trial and see it from God's perspective instead of looking at the circumstances that I can see. It is not like this pie in the sky belief that everything's fine when it really isn't. It's not about being a Christian means it doesn't hurt, so I can't act like it doesn't hurt. That's not what joy is about. Joy is about inside your inner being, you know that God is at work and he is using it and you can trust him in the midst of it. Even though it hurts, and it hurts terribly, even though you're sorrowful, even though you're grieving, whatever the situation is, those things are okay. Jesus wept. Jesus grieved with people, and he tells us to grieve with one another. Never minimize those aspects of your suffering. Trials are hard, and I'm not trying to minimize that in any way. We just want to view it as joy. We want to see the joy in it because of what God's doing in our lives. You know, just like poor little Chloe, my little dog, who just can't really grasp what is going on. We are the same way. So that means trials are about faith. Trials are about my trusting that God is at work doing all these things in my life, even when I can't see it or understand how in the world he's working or what he is doing. It is trusting that God is going to use me as a greater witness in this situation because of the darkness I'm in when I cling to him. And, you know, these are great ways for us to pray for one another when we're in trials. Pray that person in the trial will have opportunities to be a greater witness because of the genuineness of her faith being shown in the midst of that situation. Pray for her to develop the endurance that she needs, and pray that God will use it to make her mature. These are great ways to pray for people because these are the things God's trying to do that we know. And we can pray in faith knowing that this is God's will in the midst of this trial. We can trust the one who works all things together for good, as he says in Romans. And then at that point, because we realize all this, we can see it as joy. Let's pray together.